Welcome back to episode 212 of the Tall Boy Radio Podcast. And as we always say, who knows where it goes when the beer flows? Well, tonight we'll be asking, does it actually flow? Is it beer? And if not, why do we think that it is, amongst many other things? Now, last time out, episode 211, we celebrated 4 years of Tall Boy Radio. So, Gaz, we're going into our fifth year. What do you make of that?
I'd love to be five again. It's incredible. And if you'd have said when we started this many moons ago, we'd get A, into our fifth year, and B, into 200 plus however many episodes we're on, I'd have probably called you a liar. And you know what? Every Tuesday, I still enjoy it. It's still my sort of hour of freedom as such, and my hour of nonsense. And no doubt those hours of nonsense will continue. But yeah, evening all, evening the world, really, really looking forward to this episode. I'm not going to give too much away. I'm curious to know where it's going to go. And as you said, I've no doubt there'll be a few left turns along the way and a few hopefully thought-provoking questions to boot.
I don't doubt it. David, make some sense of it all.
Well, I should just apologise to our guest who's taken his time to join us tonight, as Gaz has just labelled the next hour an hour of nonsense. I'm really glad to be here, if indeed I am.
Exactly. So, Stephen, did you want to say hello and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi. The first thing I want to do is declare that I am not a professional in the topic we're talking about. What I am is somebody who started work at 12 years old writing computer software. So I've been an active geek for a number of years now, done all sorts of things, written all sorts of computer software, but deep tech, deep IT is my background. And for my sins, I started the fifth internet provision company in the UK.
There you go. There you go. David might be very familiar with that, as I think you operate within some similar fields. If you were to draw a Venn diagram, there'll be an intersection somewhere along the way.
Indeed. There always is with a Venn diagram.
There is, unless you're doing it wrong. Something we do frequently on Tall Boy Radio. So tonight we're going to be looking at simulation theory. We're going to be looking at the idea that just maybe, maybe, just maybe, we aren't all real and we are existing only in another plane of existence or what? I don't know. I'm not sure I understand it all. And hopefully by the end of the hour, I'll have a better understanding, and so will the listeners. So, Stephen, did you want to start by asking us some questions, or do you want to just fire straight into it?
Yeah, I want to ask you a question just to get you into the right place, really. And that is, if today I could prove to you that we actually are living in a simulation, do you think that would change the way that we treat each other? And do you think it would change the way that we interact with our environment and deal with our environment?
Do you want to go first, Gazza?
Right, so on posing that question, there are a couple of other questions that I will fire back just to set the parameters of the answer. So if we found out today we were living in a simulation, would it change the way that we behave, we treat each other, the way we treat our environment? Would we understand the consequences of our own actions and then the consequences on the environment of us behaving in a certain way? Because if the answer is yes, we would, and we are led to believe that that environment is, I say real, but the same as us, then I suspect that, or I'd like to think that I possibly wouldn't change the way that I act, and I wouldn't change the way that I treat the environment. I don't think I would go all gay abandoned and go, oh, it's only a simulation, it doesn't care, and all of that. I don't know. I think if I understood the parameters of the simulation and I understood that I existed within that, I possibly would hope that I had the mental fortitude to understand that if that was the case, I maybe would understand then the parameters of the environment, and I would then treat that with respect as well.
So the point you've just hit on is quite an important point, really. So if you woke up in the middle of a football pitch with a kit on, would you then start playing football, or would you go, I'm in an alien situation and therefore I'm going to walk off the pitch? And that's fundamentally the question you've asked, isn't it?
Yeah.
So If you woke up and you were the person who had to play football, so knowing that you're in the environment doesn't take away your obligation to be in the environment.
Yeah.
It's pretty much, that's an approach that I tend to take. Unless you can step out of the environment, you've got to play by the rules in the environment. So yeah. what you've actually led on to is the second question, which is, so if we are living in a simulation, What do you think the purpose of it is?
I suspect. Oh, was that to me then? I suspect.
Whoever wants to answer it for me.
If we are living in a simulation, I can only presume, and I know if you assume, you make an ass out of you and me, that it would be for some form of educational purposes for the people who have created that simulation. So it would be, I suppose, a almost like a role play simulated type of thing. Well, actually, if we do this, then this happens. And actually, if we put a population of people here and we give them all these tools and all these facilities and all this technology, they'd do this. However, if we gave the same type of people over here a different type of technology or a different type of resources or a different amount of resources, they would act differently. So I can only assume that it would be for an educational purpose for the higher beings that have created the simulation.
Okay. Anyone got any other views on that? Just out of interest.
Well, I'm going to go back a little bit to the first question, if you don't mind, because my view was slightly different to that. I remembered an experiment that was done, and it was about that feeling of detachment. So it was the idea of basically you had a dial and you could inflict pain on somebody by upping the electric current into the room. Oh, you couldn't see them. You had no idea who this person was. You knew nothing about them, but you could hear their screams and their pain. And the number of people that took it to the nth degree and actually killed the person in the booth because they felt that level of detachment. And I just wonder, if you suddenly realize that everything wasn't real, it'd be like playing a game of Grand Theft Auto. So I'm betting when you play Grand Theft Auto, dude, you aren't rescuing cats and kissing.
No, but the difference is that you've just hit the nail on the head. You're playing the game as opposed to you being in the game. So if you knew you were in the game, you would act differently than if you were the master manipulator playing the game, wouldn't you?
Yes, but I would say when I'm playing the game, I'm not the master manipulator. I am taking part in it. The game is set out for us and we are merely participating in it. Yes, we are the central role character, but in the same way that we're the central role character in our own lives now, you know, I'm the leading star of the Bean Show that's been going for 50 years and has attracted no audience whatsoever. But yeah, I just wonder with that level of detachment whether you would feel the obligation to play along to the rules or thinking, actually, Gaz isn't real. I could just punch him in the face and there's no consequence to that.
There's a difference between there being no consequence and the ultimate consequence not having any value.
Yeah.
And that's a key part of simulation theory. So there's one school of simulation theory that says, exactly as you've said, Gaz, which is we are here because we are part of an observable experiment to see how that happens. And I'll come on to later how we then look at that across multiple experiments. But then there's another school of thought that says, I'll go into something I know a bit about, which is randomization of numbers. In computing, one of the challenges we often have is creating genuinely random numbers. And you wouldn't believe the amount of time, money, and effort that's gone into creating algorithms that will create purely random numbers. Because if you can't create pure randomness, it means at some point, with enough computing power, you can crack the algorithm, and that makes security really weak over time. Yeah. So one of the biggest things that we look for in computing is sources of pure randomness. And we've done some very strange things in computing to create randomness. So, for example, you might get something that is the seed for the random number could be the current wind speed. Or it could be the wind speed and the number of rain in millimeters that happened yesterday or the day before. So we try and seed random numbers really, really effectively, because in computing power and digital computing, it's very hard to create through randomness. So one argument is our whole life is about being observed. Another argument is the entirety of the simulation that we live in has no other purpose but to drive another simulation where everything, the whole consequence of everything that happens on this planet at this instant creates a random number that actually decides whether a cat in another simulation turns left or right. So at that point, that's the ultimate, nothing you do has purpose other than generating a random number for another simulation.
And that just blew my mind. I take your point. Random theory obviously is something I know hardly anything about other than my online gambling addiction when I play poker. And, it's like, and I'm like, that fucking river card, it's always the one I don't want. And obviously, and you do a bit of reading around sort of random number generators and all of that. And if it was proved that the creation of a random number is actually really, really, really difficult, it would cast all of those sort of online gambling forums and pages and this, that, and the other into absolute chaos, because you could prove that actually it's not random and therefore it's rigged and therefore it's fixed and therefore the odds and the chances and all of that and so on and so on and so forth. So I sort of take your point in terms of being random.
The entirety of our universe could be so that someone else doesn't get a river card in another simulation somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Now that is just absolutely...
You in an alternative universe. You mean
I win in an alternative universe? Wow. No, that would be cool. You see, that sort of blew my mind a little bit. And you asked me to contemplate being in a simulation. You never asked me to contemplate being in a simulation that actually instructs another simulation to do something else. I mean, that's like way out there. So,
and that is a theory. That simulation theory is actually a theory.
Wow.
So, effectively, what Adam was talking about, Beans was talking about, this idea that if I punch you, it has no consequence. The other side of that theory is the idea of, have you ever come across a term called solipsism, which is René Descartes, philosopher, said, I think, therefore I am.
Right,
and,
okay.
And essentially, at the heart of Descartes' argument is the only reality you know, you trust, you can absolutely rely on is the reality that you exist and you don't know and have any proof at all that anything else around you exists.
Okay.
So the entirety of everything that is going on at this moment, me being interviewed on this podcast, is my subconscious's way of generating an entire artifice that keeps my conscious brain interested and entertained. So Descartes' theory is completely the opposite of the stack simulation theory. It is just there is no simulation other than the one inside your brain that is creating everything around you. And that's the opposite of the stack simulation theory.
And I guess we've all had that conversation in terms of, I know how I see the world and I can describe the world as I see it using colors, but how do I know that you see the same things that I do? You know, I can describe that as being dark black, and in my eyes, that is black. To you, it could be what I would perceive as green, and that's exactly what it is, and that's exactly how you'd describe it, but that's how you see it. So, I mean, that's pretty basic. I'm bringing it down to my primary level education, basic, you know, so I can help to understand it. But it is that perception of the world, and all, you know, and there's always that saying, isn't there? Perception is truth. Your interpretation of things is how it is. And I think if you break that down into the basis, that I can get on board with.
Yeah. I don't know whether or not we're going off topic here. This might be first left turn, but if we're
philosophy, I'm okay with philosophy.
If we are a simulation, and I suppose it comes into sentience or not, are we aware? To me, it's that awareness of self and your self worth or self place in the environment that you're in. And if you can convince yourself that therefore is real, then is it real? Because in your own mind, it is. And therefore, and I don't know the answer, and you can talk about AI, talk about robots, you can talk about technology and everything else, but are they sentient? I don't know. To me, it comes down to, do you have an awareness of your self-worth, self-environment, self-behavior, self-action, and all of that? And if you do, and you believe that that is real, then is that not real because you believe in it, so therefore it is real? I don't know.
Tell you what, it makes your head hurt, doesn't it, Dave?
Well, I was going to go back to the first question and just say that if Steve proved that we're in a simulation, would it treat something different? Well, I don't think it makes the slightest bit of difference, because I think it's following on from actually what Gaz just said, that if you exist here, whether here is a simulation or not, well, what is or not? Because the flip side of a simulation is what? Is that just not a simulation? You know, who decides what's real, what isn't? It is what it is, and therefore it's real. If Steve said you're in a simulation, and you know, if you throw yourself off a bridge, you'll come back and you'll have your second life, and you've got infinite lives, you can keep playing the game. That's completely different. If it's just I can prove you're in a simulation, but absolutely nothing changes, then it's literally that nothing changes. Why would it? Because that's just a word. that Steve said you're in a simulation. Well, so what? It makes no difference. It's exactly the same environment, exactly the same variables, exactly the same stuff's going to happen. Therefore, it is real and not a simulation.
And I agree with you, Dave. And so therefore, you believe that this is real. You believe that all your actions are real. You believe that every one of your actions has a consequence, and each of your actions has an equal and opposite reaction, or whatever the phrase was. But so therefore, it's real, isn't it? Because you don't know you don't know what the other thing is, as you said, Dave. You don't know. So what? You don't know. Well, if I don't do that, well, what does that mean? Because nobody's told you that. So as far as you're aware in your own mind, everything that you do is real.
I think what you're probably doing now is you have just literally hit the nail on the head for why I'm in love with this topic. Because it's actually a topic where physics, the ultimate thing is physics is measuring things, and repeatability meets philosophy.
Yeah.
And there are a big group of people who want to understand it so we understand how it works. And there are a big group of people who want to understand it because they want to understand why we're in it and what the purpose of it is.
Yeah.
And for me, it is that perfect intersection of physics meets philosophy. And that's why I find it such a fascinating, fascinating topic.
It's strange because when Adam sort of first said about, you know, living in a simulation, I immediately thought of the Truman Show. And Jim Carrey, that was my immediate reaction was, okay. And I'd like to think that was sort of the concept. And I take your point, Steve, it might be, is it a physical reality or is it a Sims type simulation? But yeah. The Truman Show is a guy who genuinely believed that his life was real and every action he did was real. The people around him were real. And then he comes to realize that potentially that might not be the case. And therefore, does that change his behavior, I suppose? And that was my first thought when you mentioned it. I thought, wow, that's cool. And I've never really thought about that. And you've seen the film and you know the show. Yeah. You know. So then I thought, wow, like, what if I am in? And what if I am Jim Carrey? Do you know what I mean? Like, what if I am in a situation? You know, it's like, shit, how does that work? So and what would I do if I realize that I was Jim Carrey and I actually wasn't real? And in a way, that's a scary thought, because everything that you hold dear and you hold close to you and your family, you think, well, if I'm not real, does that mean my family not real, like my wife and my kids and all that love and time that you've invested in all? So I would really struggle with that, which is why I said I didn't go back to what I said first, is that I don't think I would change, because I think what I felt was real, I would want to be real, and therefore I wouldn't want to change that by my actions.
So let me ask the third question then, because the third question sort of opens up the concept. And actually, the thing that's interesting about this third question is, as I've been asking this question for over 20 years, and this question, the answer I get is radically different today than it was 20 years ago. So the third question is, so if you were asked to create multiple simulations or simulation, would you create them physically? So would you do it in a sort of Lego block type manner and put these intelligent robots wandering around it where it was a physical simulation? So like the Jim Carrey world where everything was actually physical and tangible and real.
Yeah.
Or would you do it like Sims on a computer?
If you asked me to create a simulated world, I would do it on a computer.
And what would be your reason behind that? Just out of interest.
Because I would feel as though I would be able to create many, 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 many more multiple simulations through the use of technology than to actually physically. So I think, I suppose, go back to that, are we being scrutinized by far superior beings and not with the want of sounding like War of the Worlds and whatever it was, but you know, if we're all being scrutinized by beings of far superior intellect and we've just been created in a simulation, I would create a simulation and then I'd create another simulation with a slight variable and create another simulation with a slight variable, create another simulation with a slight variable ad infinitum, and then put all of those simulations on a timeline and then study what that looks like in 10, 15, 20, 30, 200 years time and look at the changes of those timelines, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that is one of the key theories as to why we might be operating in simulations. And there's also some other interesting evidence around that, in that if you look around the planet today, you will see lots of examples of different types of dogs, different types of canine. You'll see lots of examples of different types of feline, different types of cats, different types of bears. They can interact and interbreed. Interestingly, in our world, there is only one type of human. So a big proponent around that theory is we are in a simulation where Homo sapien dominated.
Yeah.
It could be another simulation where Neanderthal dominated.
Yeah.
And you see how that therefore evolves. And you see, you know, and so one of the things around this simulation theory, about the idea that we're in an observable simulation rather than just a random number generating simulation, is because we are effectively a unique species on this planet. We're a control group compared to all the other species. And that lends itself to the theory of observable simulation.
I suppose I absolutely take your point, and I'll come to sci-fi sort of series, TV show, whatever in a minute. But I suppose you would get some people who'd argue that, you know, the virus potentially is the dominant factor in it, the human race isn't, and it's the virus, whatever virus that may be, that is the dominant factor currently in our, if we're in a timeline or whatever it may be.
We could be the virus.
Yeah, we could be, absolutely, yeah. And you could turn around and go, you know, what's the biggest destroyer of the human environment? Well, it's humans. So we are the virus, you know. So absolutely, I take your point that could be the case. I genuinely believe that there's life beyond Earth. Like, without a shadow of a doubt, the numbers would dictate that somewhere there is the environment for life elsewhere other than just on Earth. I've got no doubt about that. When you crunch numbers and you look at the millions and millions and millions and billions of planets and this, that, and the other, there has to be, statistically, other environments that can sustain life. Now, it might, and when I say life, I mean life as we know it. So there will be another Earth somewhere. We just haven't got there yet, or haven't discovered it yet. Now, you talk about, even in our own solar system, we were asking the question, could life on Mars be, you know, could Mars have sustained life at one point? Now, it might not be life as we know it in terms of oxygen breathing, but could it be life? So when you crunch the numbers, I do believe that there's life elsewhere. So then you start to think about, well, what would happen if that life developed at a much faster rate than we did in terms of technology? And therefore, what would that life look like if it developed much slower than we have? So you could potentially have an environment where you've got Neanderthal man, and you potentially could have life where there is interstellar travel man, and they visited us and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So... Are we just a product of a vastly superior technological race that has visited us, planted a seed, horrible expression, but planted a seed however many tens of thousands of years ago, hundreds of thousands of years ago, and therefore created life? Because to me, the universe is so vast that we have to have life elsewhere. So if, are we just the byproduct of an alien race that's found this planet, dropped man onto Earth and gone, let's just look at how they get on. Let's don't give them this, don't give them that. Give them this, give them that. Don't give them this, give them that. And over time, you go, wow. They've developed nuclear technology in 1960. Watch Oppenheimer, whatever it is. Well, actually, if you fly to that planet, they discovered nuclear technology bloody 200 years ago. Or that planet's nowhere near technology.
So let's go back to the ultimate question, though, Gaz. Are they aliens flying around populating planets, or is that somebody sitting above a computer simulation doing that instead of having to go around physical planets to do it? Which feeds back into David's thing about, well, what is physical reality anyway?
Yeah, it also feeds into Albert's question. He's just asked the question. Albert's my son, by the way, Steve. If we were in a simulation, who created it? God, advanced civilizations. aliens is the etc.
And I don't pretend to know the answer to that. What I do understand is that there are certain laws of physics, there are certain laws around the physical universe and around mathematics that seem to be infallible. And so the nearest answer that physicists and philosophers have come to with that question is actually this idea that there is an infinite simulation theory. And one of the things could be that we'll never know who is at the top of that, and whoever is at the top of that might not exist anymore. This could be a product of a simulation that was started multiple billions of years ago that advanced to the point of generating its own simulations, which advanced to the point of generating its own simulations. So whatever created this at the very beginning may no longer exist. That's the nearest you get where philosophers and physicists can actually agree there's a potential answer to that. So whatever started, it doesn't exist anymore.
I had a, I've just been thinking, I remembered back in the distant past, I was going to write a science fiction book. And I've just remembered what the plot of that was, and it fits in quite nicely. Okay. Theoretically, at some point in the future, we, as the human race or anybody in the universe, could figure out absolutely everything about the universe, dark matter, dark energy, right down to whatever the smallest actual building block is. Theoretically, at some point, we may know the absolute building blocks of everything. And theoretically, computing power is scalable to the nth degree. So if you put those two things together, now imagine that the Earth exists as it does today, and this alien race comes along that knows the building blocks right down to the smallest thing and has computing power to the nth degree, and it scans our planet, then it blows it up, it captures all of the matter, and then it rebuilds it, changes a couple of things, and goes press play, sits back, watches it, and then goes, oh, that's fun. Right, now let's blow it up again. I've recorded it. So I know exactly where everything was, and I can put every single thing back to where it was again, and I can press play again.
But and this goes back to my point about the infinite realities, I suppose, and infinite universes. That goes back to my point about if they did that, then let's say they did that 1,000 times, and they go, oh, well, that's a bit boring because I've had the same outcome. I tell you what we'll do. Next time when we blow it up and we put it back together, we'll just miss that little bit out and see how that changes it. Or we'll just give them this and see how that changes it. And that goes back to what I think is that if you're going to run a simulation and whoever it is, the aliens that have far superior technology to us, why would they only run a simulation on us? Why would they not then run a simulation elsewhere or multiple simulations with multiple different potential outcomes? Because what they've done is they've just tweaked a couple of the parameters of that environment. It's a bit like you're writing a computer code, and you write a computer code, and what it is, you just tweak the odd line of code here or there, and that has then a catastrophic or whatever effect on the outcome. You know, so why would you not do that?
Maybe it's the Sims.
Yeah, absolutely. Sims. Yeah. Beans, you've been quiet this episode, dude.
I'm trying to get a bloody word in edgeways with you, as always. Well, first of all, we have a guest here, so we'll let him respond to your question, dude. And then I'll chip in with my thoughts.
See, and this is what I love about this sort of conversation, is that I don't have, you know, we are all in the simulation, I'm part of it too. I don't have the answers to some of this stuff. But what I do know is that one of the reasons that I've been involved in IT, and IT has been a big career for me, is efficiency. You know, people always, no one ever brings in computing in any sort of environment because they want to do something less efficiently. You know, their intention is always to try and be more efficient. So one of the reasons I lean towards the idea that this is a big digital simulation is it's actually more efficient to produce multiple variations very quickly in a digital environment. So for me, the digital, what we perceive as reality, what, you know, even those aliens that are going around going, we're populating these planets, in their reality, could actually be a subject to being part of the way the simulation is worked.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm a big believer in the efficiency that a digital approach to this would have. So there's not many things I'm very firm on in this space, because I meet so many great people with so many different opinions. But just the power of being able to create multiple variables and multiple environments really quickly
Yeah.
And in parallel, in my head, leans towards it being a digital environment, whatever I mean by digital.
See, it's interesting, the point that Gaz made as well, is about that, you know, I'd never really thought about it in terms of a digital reality, because my perception of the world isn't digital. Although I do work in an area which is quite heavy in technology, I don't tend to think of the world in that way. As my brother put it once, my arty-farty vegetarian lifestyle approach to life. And I think that is a little bit of how I see it. So if you were to ask me, my approach would have been more tactile in, you know, I do like playing with Lego, but that's by the by. But building a physical world, which I can then alter and manipulate, which is probably how I related to it in terms of comparing it as though being a star in your own show, like the Truman Show, and building it that way.
Yeah.
But it was interesting what Dave said as well, in terms of that concept about information. And actually, when you break everything down to its core, that we are all built of little pieces of information. That's our DNA. And every single building block has it. And we did an episode where we talked about this kind of thing. We talked about the possibility of a God existing. And you guys sort of debunked it a little bit and didn't necessarily believe it. And we, you know, you were saying that you believe that we came from monkeys. And I've always said, I don't believe that we did. Because we're too vastly different from anything else on the planet. And although you sort of say our DNA is about 99.7% the same as a gorilla, if you were to code a gorilla, you would build it exactly the same way in the inside, apart from the outside and the brain a little bit, you would build it slightly different. And it's just that small percentage. And then when you look at a banana, those building blocks are there again. So could it be that is the information that is forming those parts? The building blocks aren't building blocks of life, but building blocks of a simulation. Does that make sense?
It doesn't. It could be.
I think, Steve, with you, you preferring digital over physical.
Yeah.
Is that the opposite of digital in this context? I was trying to think.
Possibly so, yeah. Non-digital.
You really would need almost infinite computing power, because if you think in the real world, if you can say that, if you think of the butterfly effect, a butterfly flaps its wings and that could change everything everywhere. In computing, that is, you know, if you did that on a planet scale with 6.5 billion people, let alone animals, insects, nature, and everything else, the amount of computing power would have to be pretty much infinite.
So if you think about how much difficulty we have just modeling in our reality, this reality that we're in now, if you imagine how much difficulty we have mapping one element of that, which is the weather, you know, we're trying to simulate one aspect of it so we can predict it. Yeah. And that's the weather. So what I find is interesting about that is we only have our own comparator to where computing power is. But equally, I'd say, look at how we tried to measure the weather 100 years ago to where we are now in just 100 years. And then you've got Moore's Law, the idea that processing power will double every 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, so from that perspective, our computing power, and I don't know if you've looked at AI or talked about AI in any of your podcasts, but obviously the thing that's been blown up in the AI world in the last 18 months is ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Right. And then everyone said ChatGPT 3.5 was brilliant. And then they brought out ChatGPT 4. Now, I'll give you an order of magnitude difference, right? Those two releases from 3.5 to 4 were less than a year apart, right? ChatGPT 3.5 had 74 billion reference articles that it had used to build its knowledge base, 74 billion. That's a huge number. ChatGPT 4, when it came out, less than a year later, had 17 trillion reference points. So when we start to look at the power of computing, I don't think you have to go very far into the future before we start saying, actually, perfect weather simulation, one aspect that we want to simulate, isn't that far away. So, and actually, you brought me on nicely, because essentially when you talk about this, the philosophy, you can talk about what's reality versus what's digital. You can talk about what's our reality versus what's the simulation's reality. But essentially, when you talk about simulation theory, there are four arguments against whether we're in a simulation. There are three arguments for. So shall I give you the four arguments against and the three arguments for? Because I think that'd be quite interesting. So
it sounds like we already have a winner, though. It's 4-3. Game over.
How it works.
Well, there we go. Let's see that. Yeah, tell that to any team that's been down a man and won. So the four against, number one is resources. The argument you just made, there is just not enough computing power to create the sort of complex simulation that we've got. That's the number one argument. Number two is, this is the interesting one for me. And for me, this was the one that really stumped me until relatively recently. Number two is the idea that we have consciousness.
Yeah.
So if we were sims in a simulation, we wouldn't have consciousness. And you can't, in using our current digital technology, you can't simulate consciousness. So the fact that we are conscious beings means we can't be in a simulation. Number three, the physical laws of physics and mathematics lack inconsistency. Now, the interesting idea about that is physics is brilliant in that the laws of physics are there and they work, and they work on a big scale and they work on small scales. And the law of mathematics works on a big scale, works on small scales. And we can see in that being used everywhere, like Fibonacci sequences, in the way that shells are structured and the way that trees grow and all sorts of stuff, golden ratio. And the idea of the physical laws that lack inconsistency is basically saying that means someone would have had to create a perfect computer simulation with no bugs. So the very fact there are no bugs, no glitches in this, means it can't be a simulation. It must be a reality. It must be physical because there are no bugs. And then the fourth one, the last one, is that actually to believe that we live in a simulation, to believe that we understand how our universe exists, is an extension of the Descartes thing, the extension of solipsism. It's an extension that we know better than anything else if we know that we live in this, and we can't know that. It's an unprovable theory. So to state absolutely we live in a simulation is an example of narcissistic solipsism, and effectively you can't prove it, so you can't state it. So they're the four arguments against. The three, four, there was, and the first one I loved is, it was the philosopher, which was Nick Bostrom. He wrote a paper in 2003, which is called "Are You Living in a Computer Simulation?" And what I love about that was although there was mathematics in the paper, he actually took a more philosophical approach to why did God, if God was the omnipotent being that we all think that God was, and he created us, why didn't he want to create lots of versions of us and see which ones did well? And on top of that, if you look at the way that we live our lives and the way that things happen, and we'd all talk about serendipity and coincidence and all that sort of stuff, actually there's a lot leaning towards that we must be living in some sort of constructed environment. So whether you call that God or a simulation, it doesn't matter. We're living in a constructed environment. The second is a guy called James Gates, who's a mathematician. And he uses the idea of mathematical patterns and Fibonacci and the physical laws and string theory and all that. So James Gates uses the argument of the fact that we've got physics and mathematics to say, if I was creating a world, I would use a set of constants and rules and a set of variables, and I wouldn't have them move around too much. So actually, the fact that we have got the laws of physics and the laws of maths is a great example that we have got simulation, and that we are in a simulation because we've got all these constants that we work with. And then the final one is the idea, and this answers a little bit about the computing power thing, is something called quantum intermediate observation, but you might also know it as fractal theory. How many of you have ever played a computer game where the mountains are off in the distance and they're very, you know, they're very blurred, but as you get towards them, the detail gets added in?
Yeah.
And the idea is, if we're in a simulation using sort of quantum intermediate observation, fractal theory, using that theory, it means we don't need a huge amount of computing power because we only need to focus on the things that you're immediately surrounded by to fill in the detail. And effectively, other things are in a fractal state until we get near enough to them that we need to put some computing power into them being more observable, more interactive. So has anything I've said there sparked any thoughts around?
Yeah. I mean, the theory that, you know, you're in a bubble, and I suppose you use it a bit like a, you know, whether it's a sat nav or whatever it may be, but you know, you're driving along and you only really need to know the detail of your immediate environment, because actually you don't, if you're driving a car and you go from here to Scotland or whatever, you don't really need to know what Scotland's like at the moment. You only need to really know what the next 5 miles alike or 10 miles alike. So I get that, that there's that incremental change or whatever it may be. And I get that. What fascinates me is, and it goes back to something that, oh God, it was a fad a number of years ago now. And there was a philosophy of shift happens and the computational power of the human race and all of that. And I'm in education, so we use it a lot for, you know, the top 10 jobs in demand in 2023 didn't exist 10 years ago, that type of thing. But it talks about the computational power of the computer. And they reckon that they could build a supercomputer by, was it 2025? I mean, bearing in mind that shift happened, started like 15, 20 years ago, whatever it was. But they could build a computer that had the computational power that would exceed the whole of the computational power of the human species. And you're like, fucking hell. Like, that's like a lot. Like, that can do a lot. Bearing in mind that you read lots of other theory where we only use 20% of our capacity and we only do this and we only do that. And then if you're taking that into account, what they're saying is in a few years' time that you've got a computer that can actually outdo the whole of the human race. You're like, shit the bed. Like that's like a lot of shit. So you can, that's a lot of computational power to put in lots of different parameters for lots of different simulations for lots of different things. And I don't know whether we're there yet in terms of that computational power, but you only have to look at, as you said, Steve, the increase in the chat GDP and what that references over a short period of time. You know, we've got more computational power now than took man to the bloody moon however many years ago. You know, there's more computational power in that, which is my iPhone, than there was that took man to the moon, for Christ's sake. So, you know, like, there has to come a point where it becomes more of a possibility that we are in this simulated environment. There has to come like almost like a tipping point where you think, well, actually, the odds would suggest that we are, as opposed to we're not, because everybody up to now is going, well, I don't think we are. There's a few that do, but the further you go, the more you've got to think that the odds would stack in favour. I don't know.
For me, it goes, but if I'm going to focus on the argument against, I'm on the fence with this one. I'm not going to lie, I'm on the fence. Because I've always believed that we are, that there is something about the human race being so vastly different, that there is a purpose for us being here.
Yeah.
And I don't understand it. Do I believe we were created by a God who built us in his own image and made Adam out of mud and made and ribs and what have you? No, I don't believe in that. But I do believe in the idea from that came from that recognition that we are so significantly different in what we've achieved and the level of understanding. And even before you throw into the equation stuff like the ancient Egyptians and what they were able to achieve building that pyramid, we still can't comprehend how that was done now. So somewhere along the way, that knowledge has been lost. And like you say, the knowledge has been lost to take man to the moon, even though your iPhone's smart enough to probably do those calculations for you. It's the bit that confuses me. The argument against is that consciousness and the purpose of the consciousness of me and how you word. It's not so much the perception of the world, but my interpretation of it. It's my consciousness, my self-awareness.
Yeah.
And the fact that you would also be self-aware, you know, in my basic understanding of a simulation, as I'm sort of developing it, originally we're looking at like the sort of Vice City model where there's one conscious model and everybody else is an NPC. To have a multiplayer game with 8 billion people is, I find it very difficult to get
my mind-blowing.
Mind-blowing, literally. I find it difficult to get my head around. And it's the level of consciousness that we all possess, that each perception is different. And then to be able to understand that we might be in a simulation, I would fear would be beyond the comprehension of the components of that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does. What I want to ask Steve.
I don't know why I'm asking him.
No, it does, because you go back to that, if you're all in it and you're all not really aware, it doesn't really matter. But if you are all aware, then how can 8 billion people be aware or whatever it is? You know, and that, I suppose that's your point. What I want to ask Steve is, what do you think, Steve? Because you've asked us, and you asked us those two or three questions. Yeah. I want to know what you think.
So I tend to avoid the philosophical part about are we here to create a random number, or are we here because we're being observed? So for me, I'm in David's camp, which is I don't care which it is. I'm experiencing my life as it is.
Yeah.
So from my perspective, I tend to avoid well, it's not that I avoid the deeper philosophical part of it. I just acknowledge I haven't got an answer to that, and that's part of what makes life interesting. My belief is, whether you believe in God or not, what we all tend to agree on is we're all experiencing something.
Yeah.
What I get from my background in IT is that actually there are things that are happening around us that we will never have control of. There are things that are happening that we will never be in control of. So that's an element of randomness out there in the world. We tend to create in our perception. We talk about perception being truth and reality. We create these things, these perceptual bubbles around us. And what the entirety of that perceptual bubble is to get us through every day of our lives. And that's an important part of it. So my belief is actually that we are in a simulation. I don't pretend to understand what the purpose of the simulation is.
Yeah.
I don't pretend to understand what the outcome of my activity in this simulation will do or generate. But I do believe that, you know, for whatever reason, we have been created within some sort of environment that is potentially observable.
So do you believe then that and while you said you don't understand what that might be, do you believe that you have been created for a purpose? And I don't mean in the spiritual religious aspect, or, you know, so do you feel there is a purpose for you to be in this simulation?
Yeah. So from a higher purpose perspective, I don't actually hold on to any theory that I'm here for a higher purpose in that respect. I think I have got a series of choices ahead of me. I think I make those choices. I live by a code of ethics that makes sense to me. I think I live by a code of morals that makes sense to me and around, you know, the way that I behave around other people and with other people. But quite frankly, if at the end of the day, you know, when my presence stops, it will have created some variability in this world. And there will be far-reaching effects of that variability over a number of generations. And that's as far as I can go with that, really. You know, if that's a purpose, if my purpose was to generate an element of randomness in this environment, then I've achieved it.
Okay, can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question then? If you feel as though you maybe, and excuse me for I'm not belittling what you've said, but if you feel as though you haven't got an input into whatever it is that the simulation that you feel as though you might be in, and you feel as though you perhaps can't affect change within that simulation other than being maybe a tiny, 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 tiny parameter, who do you feel can affect the change within the simulation that you're in?
Well, there's all sorts of stuff around that. So the first one is, I do believe individuals can make significant changes. I think, you know, the idea that we can perform random variable acts and the ability to act outside a character, whenever someone acts outside a character, they're performing some sort of random variable act. So for a start, the question is, do we want people to do that? Or is that working against the simulation? Or is that actually a beneficial thing to the simulation?
Yeah.
So, and then the other thing is that I love to cite the idea. Do you remember when Nike first launched Air Jordans?
Yes.
Okay, so they launched Air Jordans, and it was one of their most popular shoe. And I think it sold something like 40 million pairs around the world. And they did a consumer survey around that. And the answer, they asked people, what made you go for Air Jordan? And Air Jordan was the first one where you had the variable pump on the thing around your ankle, so you could adjust the comfort levels around your ankle and on the tongue. And actually, they did a market survey. 40 million people around the world said that the reason they chose Air Jordans, the biggest single answer that was given was it accentuated my individuality. So you've got 40 million people accentuating their individuality. So I believe that actually, whether or not I do something is very small and probably immeasurable, but whether or not I'm part of a whole wave of activities that generate something could actually be very big and very significant.
Right.
And so it's, you know, more than the sum of your individual part, I guess, is where.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, I get that. I get that from a, I suppose from a philosophical point of view, yes, you can act differently, and yes, you can behave differently. And if a significant number of people act and behave differently, that then might affect the change. If that's
A group of ants.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to come back, Steve, to the fours and against.
Yeah,
it was interesting that the physics and maths model was in both.
Yes.
So it's got to be perfect to exist, and if it's perfect, it can't exist, essentially, something along those lines. But with computer programs, if we're a digital simulation, you know, I've got a background in computer programming, not a very good one, but I've got a background in it, and makes the point that most things I wrote had bugs in, but then you fix them. So, you know, if you're a simulation, you run it, it crashes, you turn it off and on again, don't you? You change a line of code, off and on again.
Exactly.
So eventually the simulation would, if it follows any of my experience in programming, it runs longer and longer, but still crashes eventually because something happens to crash it, and you run it, you fix it, and it runs more and more. So I don't think that's an against.
But if you look at a computer program and you take computer program to the nth degree, my limited understanding of computer programming is that you can write programs that effectively sell future-proof themselves. So you say, Dave, that it runs and runs and runs and runs and runs, and then eventually it will crash. But by running the program eventually, the program will learn and therefore will be able to adapt to the potential crashes of its own program, and therefore won't crash.
So for me, there's two elements to that. The first one is our concept of time, and I don't want to misquote Einstein, but effectively, you know, time is relative. So our unit of measurement of an eternity and our unit of measurement of an instant is all relative to the way we experience our environment. So real simple question, because one of the things we say is we're conscious. And because we're conscious, we can't be in a simulation. How do we know that in whatever the unit of time outside the simulation is, we haven't been paused 400 times over the equivalent of in what our lifetime would be 300 years? Well, we've been having this discussion. We just wouldn't know. If you pause the computer, and if you play games, the point that I agree with David is what happens if someone then, if we were in a simulation that was a game even, and someone got to the point where they, you know, playing the simulation, they lost their favorite character, what's to stop us going to the last save point and restarting from that point?
But what is the last save point? And I suppose that's what is the, is it those extraordinary events? I don't know. But if we go back to the last save point, it goes back to, wow, like this is really deep. But it goes back to that, like, master manipulator. It's that person or being or aliens, whatever. It's their save point. It's not everybody's save point, and everybody's save point will be different because everybody that's looking at the simulation or playing the game has different save points because each person along the way will play the game differently and therefore will save the game differently, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's just like mind-blowingly, like, I can't even start to compute that because somebody could start, you know, somebody could pause the game now, 55 minutes and 35 seconds. Somebody could have paused our podcast 2 minutes ago at 53 minutes. Somebody could have paused it. There's an infinite amount of opportunity or reality to every single timeline that we ever experience. And that's just mind-blowing.
I'll tell you what, dude. Mind-blowing. I feel like I'm an analog man in a digital world. I do right now.
I feel like I'm a left footer in a right footer's world. That's what I feel. I feel like I'm a left footer in a right footer's world. That's what I feel like.
Anders Limpar.
Albert's made another comment, hasn't he? Maybe we're in the game. We just don't know it. When you die, you just take your headset off and you realise it was all a game.
Well, if that's the case, Albert.
but it's a great point, isn't it? You know, we could be characters, and you talk about 8 billion. 8 billion, you know, role-playing characters in a game. Who's to know? In whatever sort of civilization or population that lives outside of this, why isn't 20 trillion people playing? Maybe 8 million is just a small number of people in a very tiny game. So
the GM for 8 million NPCs. Christ almighty, can you imagine that role-playing game? Bloody hell.
So Steve, I'm just going to ask you a question, Steve. One of the things, coming back to your for and against, and the against was that if it was a computer simulation as opposed to a real simulation,
a physical simulation, Dave, not
physical
real.
Simulation. One of the things against was that you couldn't have consciousness. So do you think that given that the way computing is going and that our understanding of the, just our understanding, let alone anybody out there, is eventually going to understand so much more. So we know absolutely what everything that happens inside our brain, cannot consciousness be recreated?
David, you've just hit, out of all those four against, number three, number two, the idea that consciousness was subject and subjectivity is so human, it can't be part of a simulation. Based on everything I knew about current technology, that was always the one that tripped me up about whether that was always my glimmer of doubt. Right. And then we get to 2022. And in 2022, a group of researchers from Trinity College Dublin announce that they've observed the human brain operating in a state of quantum entanglement. And we are just on the cusp of creating quantum computing in our world. So for me, it doesn't matter how many reference points you give ChatGPT, it doesn't matter if you give it 177 trillion, it's always going to be a very, very well-refined mimic, because it's always going to use, if it's using traditional digital processing power, the game changer for me is if we start to get into quantum computing, and that quantum computing can create complex structures, and that we know our brain operates on the basis of quantum entanglement. So for me, the last hurdle about whether we are in a simulation got knocked down in 2022 by those researchers in Dublin. Because for me, the next evolution of computing could take us to the point where we run those sorts of observable simulations. And the beings within those simulations believe they have consciousness.
Yeah. And that's the journey that's so if we can create consciousness, we can create a simulation to simulate consciousness and therefore beings within our simulation. And if that's the case, you extrapolate that back however many thousands of years and say, well why wasn't that done to us? And we are the reincarnation of that, and what all we're doing is we are just perpetuating that, and therefore we've now got to the point where we can recreate consciousness. So we're going to do exactly the same, and it's just the next simulation, and we're going to do exactly the
simulation too.
Doesn't this fall down though? Because if we get to the point within the simulation that we actually believe it's a simulation, don't we just go and unplug ourselves, like in the Matrix?
We got
through an hour without mentioning the Matrix.
I'm sorry.
To be fair, I thought about the Matrix about 45 minutes ago, and thought when Neo was in there and Steve was talking about computer simulation, and I thought about the Matrix, not knowing he won't want us to mention that, and we got through an hour without mentioning it.
I was waiting for the right time.
The interesting thing about the Matrix, if you think about it, is it was a digital simulation that was actually fed by a physical construct of a human that was being managed by another physical construct. There's nothing to say that we're not in a digital simulation, creating digital simulations inside a digital simulation. So I'm not sure how you turn that off.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you this now. 212 episodes of the Tall Boy Radio Podcast. There's many I've started not knowing where it's going to go. This is the only one I think is finished where I'm not entirely sure where it's been.
I didn't know where it started. I don't know where it's gone. I don't know where it's going to end.
I feel I know less now than I did at the beginning.
No, look. I'm a bit of a geek, and I think Steve, you know, we're all geeks on this podcast, and Steve obviously fits our mold. We're all geeks, so to me, it's fascinating because I am a huge believer, and I said it before on a couple of different podcasts and couple of different episodes. I genuinely believe that there is sentient life out there, and that sentient life, just because the numbers will either be hugely more technologically advanced than us or hugely technologically less advanced than us. And if they are technologically advanced, then who's to say they haven't visited us? They can't do interstellar travel and all of that. So I'm with you, Steve. And I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that I think we are in a simulation, but you have made me question actually existence and stuff. So that's like pretty cool.
My question to you guys are, if there is interstellar life out there, and it is a simulation.
Do you think there isn't then?
No, I believe, I don't doubt it for a second that there has to be based on an infinite universe of infinite
Absolutely. Yeah.
There has to be. But if it is a simulation, I feel that that detachment, what does it matter?
I don't know.
Is that the crux of it? I feel I'm too founded in my analog world.
I think you can go away from this with a feeling of, well, perhaps my entire purpose is being observed. You can go away from this with a feeling, well, perhaps my entire purpose of this was to be one element in a randomization algorithm. Or you can go away from this going, do you know what? It's been a really interesting hour.
It has.
I'll crack on.
Genuinely, Steve, it's been like...
No, I've loved it.
It's been an absolutely fascinating hour. And I can't believe we're an hour and 3 minutes in, because I could probably carry on talking about this for another couple of hours if I'm honest. But
I feel there'll be at least one more episode.
Yeah, 100%,
because,
yeah.
Because
we haven't talked about The Matrix. So, I mean, that's the whole new hour, that is. I mean, come on.
You don't want to talk about The Matrix. But I feel like I need to go and sit down, and I will do it tomorrow night when I sit down and edit it, listen to it, and write down all the questions that come into my mind. Then I'll listen to it again, and I'll probably have more questions.
Yeah, I've got no idea what the answers are.
I have no idea what the answers are.
No, but is that not the point of an absolutely fascinating podcast? Is that we challenge our listeners, and we look, if there's any listeners out there, they want to get in touch with us, tell us what you think, tell us what your thoughts are. And you know what? We'd absolutely be delighted to have Steve back on.
100%.
You know, and if we can get some feedback, and we can talk about, we've gone away, we've thought about it, we've rationalized what we've said. We've tried to sort of contemplate the parameters of whatever it is we live in, and let's go again.
Indeed, 100%. We will definitely have you back on again, Steve. I think I will have I do research for every episode, and this is the only one I think I've looked at it maybe once.
You looked at it once to get a name.
Yeah,
and to be fair, it was a name that Steve mentioned. You went, yeah, that's a bloke.
That's the one, I wrote too much down.
Now you do loads of research, but is it not? You do loads of research in the nicest sort of way, just in case the guests aren't great and you can then talk.
Yeah.
Whereas Steve and myself, mainly, have been chatting away, and it's felt like the last hour and 5 minutes has just flown by.
It has gone by very, very quickly. Yeah. I always do a fair bit of research just in case we need prompts.
Yeah.
I felt this is what I felt when I was doing the research yesterday. This was one of the episodes I wouldn't need prompts for. And the thing that's fascinated me, the thing that I've enjoyed the most about it, is that my idea of the concept is vastly different to everybody else's, and that's why I feel like I've learned the most.
Yeah,
I will take the most away from this episode than I have out of the previous 209. I mean that in the utmost respect to all the other guests that we've had on the past. I feel like I have learned the most. That this episode has made me think more than any other episode that we've recorded.
It's challenged us intellectually. It's challenged us perceptually. It's challenged us from a spiritual, moral standpoint. Everything you want to be challenged by, just from a it's been fascinating. Absolutely, like not quite mind blowing, because we haven't got to the answer, and we'll never get to the answer, will we? So you know, but just to contemplate the different options that we've gone through, it is amazing. And absolutely, for just personally, Steve, it's fascinating what you know, what you read and what you research and what you're into. So I would absolutely love to have you on again.
100%.
Thank you very much.
I feel we could do a second hour. I do feel we could do a second hour and probably more. So before we let you go, have you got any final thoughts for us? Anything else you want to chuck out there? And can we also get you on again at some point in the very, very near future for you to fill another hour for us?
So what I'll close off with is I'll close off with a school of philosophy that actually flies completely in the face of simulation theory. And it's something called qualia. And the idea of qualia is that every experience you ever have in any instant of your life is totally unique and you cannot replicate it. So the idea is when you taste a strawberry, your brain is telling you what a strawberry tastes like from you having sampled a million strawberries. And now what you're getting in your brain is the average of all the strawberries you've ever tasted and slightly better or slightly worse. But even if you put another strawberry in your mouth and multiple seconds later, your body chemistry will have altered slightly. Your acidity of your mouth will have altered slightly. There are so many variables just in you eating two strawberries 2 minutes after each other. So when you think about simulation theory, think about the fact that you've got to build all of that into any simulation that you create. That for me talks about a huge amount of computing power, the like of which we are not going to get through in the next 100 years in our experience. But that's not to say that other civilizations elsewhere haven't already got.
I could ask a question then, but I won't. That's the next episode.
No, go and chuck it in. Chuck it in quickly.
So what you're saying is, so every single sense that we experience, whether it be taste, sight, sound, whatever it may be, every single sense for every single human being in every single environment they ever experience in their own consciousness needs to be part of a computational power.
Yes.
Fudging hell. And I'll just leave you on that thought because that's blown my mind.
Yeah, let's Alan Partridge that one. And on that bombshell. So, right, I'm afraid to ask Steve any more questions. I don't know. Dave, what are your thoughts? Sum it up for us.
Summing up, I don't think the universe is infinite. I think the flat earth guy we had on, you could tell him it's just a config setting. And my fundamental beliefs that haven't changed. You're born, you make the best of it, you die.
Okay. Gaz, I feel you might have a different opinion.
Yeah, I potentially believe the universe is infinite. I do think there's an infinite amount of possibilities out there. We just haven't found it yet. I think you do. You are born, you live, and you die. However, I do think that there's lots of things along the way. And you know what? I'm a massive believer in interstellar travel and aliens and all of that. And I suppose that leads me to think that potentially we could be being manipulated by a master race. I don't know that. I'm not aware of that. I'm not conscious of that. However, I am conscious of my own environment, my own self-worth and my own being. So am I comfortable in that? Yeah, I am, until I'm proved otherwise.
Steve, give us a little nugget to think about as we leave.
I'll come back to one of the original questions. If you were going to create a simulation, how would you do it and what would its purpose be?
Purpose, that's an interesting one, isn't it, really? Because that's probably
something... Why are we doing it?
Oh, yeah, that's something we perhaps haven't even touched on. That's where we're going to maybe pick up on.
100%.
Then 100%, you know, we'll do it again. You know, even if you have to drag Steve back kicking and screaming, we'll do it again. Don't you worry about that. So, Steve, would you like to say your goodbyes, or so long anyway to our listeners?
Because we'd like to. It has been a real pleasure. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk with you and share ideas with you. It really has been a fantastic experience for me as well. Thank you.
Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Gaza?
Yeah, just thanks, Steve, for coming on. Challenged us in ways intellectually that we possibly haven't been challenged maybe before. So absolutely 100% look forward to the next time that Steve comes on with us. Can't wait to see what where that goes again. Goodbye, the world.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, thank you very much. Like I said, this episode has made me think about all the things that you talked about, all right? More or less diametrically opposed to my ideas of life. And I like that because I like that it challenges the way I think about stuff. At the start of this, like I said, we looked into it and I researched it like I do every episode. But I've researched it from a point of view, from my own point of view, and I think that tells us enough about living in a simulation and consciousness and everything like that, that I do think it would be absolutely remiss of us if we didn't revisit this at some point in the very, very near future. But that is it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for your contributions. Thank you for everybody who's listened. And let us apologize to you now for making your brain hurt. So we all wish you a fond farewell.